Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting, September 9th at 6:30. Can I ask for a roll call, please, Celia?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. Karen, can I ask you to lead us in a flag salute?
Attention. Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Everybody's a little warm tonight.
Thanks. The agenda review, is there any additions or added deletions?
Yes, President Lucy. For agenda item number 8C, which is review and approval of cash disbursements, we've provided a modified list to include an Anthem Blue Cross payment of $4,002. The actual modified list says it's due on 10-9, but its actual due date is no later than 10-1. And the point of having it on this agenda as opposed to the next meeting is we didn't want to cut it too tight in terms of mailing and make sure that they Anthem Blue Cross has it in plenty of time. So that's the single item that's been added to 8C, part of the consent agenda. So if your board's so inclined, the motion at that point would be to approve the consent agenda as modified.
Okay, great.
I so move.
Okay. Not yet.
Okay, any other changes to the agenda?
Oh.
Okay, hearing none, I'll accept a motion to...
I'll move to approve as presented.
Okay.
Second.
Karen's a second on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Passes? 5-0. Special presentations? No special tonight. Okay. Let's go into public comment. Can we do public comment right here? This is for items that are not on the agenda. Is there anybody who would like to do public comment tonight? I know that Charles put a slip in. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Lucy. And
nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see you too.
Good evening, Charles.
Hi, Matt. I've been away for a little while. Not away from town, but I thought I'd give you a break. This is a big month for us here in the Five Cities area. Our three city councils are going to, they have the Phillips 66 oil train terminal project agendized. They're going to be discussing it, and they're going to be taking a position on it one way or another. I'm pretty confident that they're going to come out not supporting the project because they are aware of the tremendous dangers and threats that it poses to our communities, our public safety, our economy, our environment. I was coming here regularly and encouraging you to take the lead on this, that I remember there was, you know, there was a lot of concern about the sewage spill, and remember the South Coast Journal featured the Welcome to Oceano and the sewage spill thing, and it was, and there's still time for you all to get on board the Grassroots Express train on this. I know that you call, you know, and I have a lot of respect for you all, and if I start to sound a little critical, please take it, remember that it's coming from a point of respect, but you are my government, and the first duty of local government is to protect the safety of the citizens. Up and down the rail line, every board of supervisors in the southern counties and in the northern counties has taken a stand on this. They're not waiting for the EIR to be finished. They are not the permitting agency. But they haven't let that hold them back for standing up for their citizens. They got a couple of, water wells. Even if that never happens, the pollution that's going to float down over our area is dangerous. It's carcinogenic. It's going to be happening for decades. If not you folks, who's going to stand up for us? Who's going to say no? Who's going to represent the AIDS? Oh, please consider what you can do for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Jennifer, I wanted to ask you, did the Oceano Advisory Committee, did they hear this topic yet?
No, we have not. We do have some feelers into the League of Women Voters for possibly hosting a forum, but I have not heard back from them yet.
So. Okay, so we'll follow up on that. I think that's
still considering it.
That's a good place for it to be most impactful. Thank you. And then Mona Pastor, please.
Good evening, Madam President and the board and the staff here. It's very good. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you again. I have been doing some research, and I did find out that I am in the blast evacuation zone. I live just short of the Pike on 22nd Street. Shape. It looks like it's out of a Charles Dickens play. The fact that Union Pacific has allowed a bridge that to get into that condition does not, for me, bode well in how they will maintain their equipment. And we do all know that federal guidelines have been approved, and who's fighting them? Phillips 66. As a matter of fact, some of the new cars that Phillips 66 has bought are not going to be allowed. But, interestingly enough, that will not be enforced for 5 years. So, what about in the meantime? I urge you to consider your civic, governmental, and human responsibilities as members of this board to speak out now against the hazards of this plan. It's an insane plan, really, to transport 2.4 million gallons a day for 5 days a week, daily, through populated areas. City services are within a stone's throw. Our fire department is here. I had a little trouble with my computer printer, but I was about to print out some photographs of what happened in Lac Magnétique, Quebec, a small town, beautiful, tree-lined, looked a lot like Oceano, except they weren't palm trees and the type of evergreens we have. It was more like deciduous oaks and maples. The middle of the night in July, 2 years ago, there was a derailment, and it was only a 1.2% grade, and that's just going 1.2 feet change in elevation for every 100 feet. So that's not a lot for that train to derail and explode. And these people are just this month, just past August, rather, at the end of August, getting some financial settlement. Can you imagine what our community would go through having to expend funds, taxpayer funds, that aren't there? People do not want higher taxes. The bankruptcies, the financial burden of people finding temporary housing, not to mention our fact that our wells are within the blast zone. And the groundwater, this is a sandy fill section of a geologically moving area that could very well not just cause temporary suspension of safe water for us, but it could be toxic, could decontaminate groundwater. I submit for your research letters from the Goleta Water District, where they took a stand. And I believe I have copies for everyone here, and I have one packet of other articles from the League of Women Voters, who has gotten on board and said they oppose this, as has our local SLO newspaper. I'm sure you all read that.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and later tonight you will be considering the Northern Cities Management Area Monitoring annual monitoring report, but you'll also be considering the FUGRO contract for services to do the monitoring. What you're not considering tonight is a contract with WSC. And for some time before you did it, I advocated that you no longer fund the WSC portion of the monitoring plan. And you eventually did that. You no longer pay to be part of that contract that the Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Grover Beach are paying for. I didn't bring copies for all of you, but work for the monitoring program. And then there's one this year that I don't know if was in your mailbox, but it's not part of tonight's staff report because you don't have a financial contribution going in there. But what this letter says that's different from last year is that Oceano has opted out, but it does say that the Oceano Community Services District has declined to participate in the staff extension services contract, and thus the total budget for the through in-kind contributions of staff time by its general manager. Last night, this was considered in Arroyo Grande, and their council has asked that an accounting of that in-kind work, some receivables, some agreement be made with the CSD, with you, for the services of your general manager, and just what exactly will Mr. Ogren be doing to offset the cash contribution that you're not putting in. And I know that he already goes to these meetings, and Zone 3 goes to the NCMA meetings. He provides input just like any other staff from the other three agencies. And I want to know what's different. I'm sure they're going to want to know what's different that comes up to the $20,000 annual contribution.
Thank you,
to
Ms. Tucker.
This contract. So.
Is there anybody else who'd like to do public comment tonight? Okay, hearing none. I'm going to move right along. South County Sheriff's Department. No uniforms in the house. Okay. That's right. They're all on the streets. Tony, how are you?
Good evening, Board. I'm good.
Good.
Tony Maricino. So we had 14 work orders, 8 USAs, 6 customer service calls. We had 0 call outs. Lopez is currently at 32.7%, which is 16,163 acre feet. Oceano CSD, since the beginning of the year, has used 368 acre feet of state water, and we've pumped 111 acre feet of state water. We had no SSOs for the month of August. The field staff attended a underground service alert class, which is who's responsible for the underground utilities, whether it's marking, digging. It was a good refresher course for everybody, because we have hit gas mains in the past due to improperly marked, and then it goes to the liability. So it was a good refresher course. Monthly cleaning of sewer laterals for the problem areas, weed abatement, one that's going to be paid by the county. So we're currently working with them to get everything situated and ready, because we do have utilities regarding manholes, valve boxes that need to be raised. Continued sewer cleaning, you know, meter reads coming up. Staying pretty busy. Everything's going pretty good.
I have a question.
Yes.
And then I know Karen has a question. So you said that the county's actually going to put some streets in?
There's a paving project to repave your streets in Oceano.
And it's more than the slurry, silky
slurry. Is my understanding, yes.
And did they look at geographically where the schools are and the roads that are well-traveled to the schools? Because I'm thinking that you mentioned 22nd Street, but people go up 23rd Street to take their kids to school.
It's going to be an ongoing paving project with the county for years to come, 2016, 2017, 2018.
Really?
I believe it's a 4 or 5 year paving project that the county's doing.
Madam President?
Yes.
Being a little bit familiar with the county's road maintenance program.
Really?
Yeah. The ranking of roads is based on what's called PCI, or Pavement Condition Index, and there's some really good studies out there that show as long as you provide maintenance in a timely manner, you know, your costs down the road are reduced. And I can't remember if it's between 60 and 65 or 65 and 70, but they go based on this Pavement Condition Index in order to identify when they need to rehabilitate the roads. The general rule is that after you've done a paving project where you've put on new asphalt, and around year 7 you do a slurry, and around year 14 you would do your second slurry, and it's around year 20 then you would do a pavement project to replace it. But the idea of slurries and what they call rejuvenators is you can actually, you know, apply products then that will rehabilitate the pavement that's already starting to dry out. So I'm not sure if they were doing slurries or whether they're doing an AC overlay on this particular route, but we can certainly provide information on what their plans are, both in the immediate and down the road as well. So they're predominantly based on PCI, but they also are now starting to modify it in order based on volume, so that the higher volume roads end up having a higher priority. Because like our county and many agencies throughout the state, the ability to keep up with the existing road network is extremely problematic. So they go predominantly based on the Pavement Condition Index, but now they're also employing volume in order to identify the roads that have higher volumes, and that's their basic approach. With comes to schools and paths, there's special funding for safe routes to school when that's applicable.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, Oceana is extremely unique in that we're at the bottom of the hill. So, you know, the water rolls down. It's the key point.
So we'll route to the board members what their pavement plan is.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. I know that the Safe Paths to School was looking at a lot of the areas around Oceana Elementary for crosswalks, sidewalks, and try to keep the children as safe as they can. So
yeah.
I've seen them out there surveying and been out there when they're doing it. So.
Yeah, and I've noticed them surveying around town too. But and then do they include stop signs? Because the oddest thing happens is that, you know, there's certain stop signs in this town that just get lower and lower and closer to the ground. So maybe you mentioned.
I wondered if the sewer plant made it through the Labor Day holiday without any problems. We didn't have any problems back
no
in
hiccups.
The sewer.
No hiccups whatsoever.
And is that line finished now?
I do not currently know if it's finished.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. And will you let us know, because of the last spill, I know that there'll probably be some fines, you know, being incurred or whatever. Will you let us know when that happens?
With the CSD being in, I don't anticipate any fines to Oceano CSD.
Great. That's good news.
I have a couple of correspondence from the fire department, including in my hand, I have the fire chief's report. The big news is that the Five Cities Fire Authority has launched a social media presence for the community. There has been another one, but this one is going to be the official Five Cities Fire Authority. And the tweet is at, in caps and lowercase, all one word. And the Facebook is 5 with a cap F city space cities with a cap C fire authority and then PIO again. And to share information on events, public education, community preparedness, and we hope it will be the official voice of the Five Cities Fire Authority. And the other reports are, number one, the Five Cities Fire Authority will be participating at Grover Beach at Ramona Gardens Park on the 911 Memorial event, which is Friday from 5:30 to 6:30. We have closed the recruitment for the battalion chief, and we got about 20 applications, so we looks like very soon we'll have a second battalion chief on board. Year to date, we've responded to, I can't even read my own writing here, 2,145 calls, of which 1,520 or over 70% is medical calls, 2.3% is fires, 12.2% is mutual aids, and they are now charting the calls by station. And year to date, as this is of September 2nd, Arroyo Grande Station 1 has responded to 796 calls. Station 2, Grover Beach, has responded to 750. And Station 3, Oceano, which also includes part of Grover Beach, we are first responders to part of Grover Beach, has responded to 599 calls. So we're rolling along, and we've had, through September, there was, things were very, anyway, and I think that's it. If anybody has any questions.
That report's on the website, correct? I
believe so.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
People want to know more, they can go to the Five Cities website.
Or just write out. You just have to write out Five Cities Fire Authority just on the computer, and it'll get you where you want to go.
Yeah, Google's really good about that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Karen. Mr. Ogren.
Yes. Going back to Five Cities Fire Authority, Vice President White, you had mentioned that Station 3 here in Oceano provides first response to portions of Grover Beach. And the map I looked at, I thought it also provided first response to portions of Arroyo Grande as well.
Well, yeah.
To both cities.
Yeah. Right at the, you know, like 7-Eleven, that area. Yeah. The whole, it's, the boundaries are determined by first responder, who can get there the fastest first. It isn't by the borders of the towns. Correct. Although they are going to chart the calls by cities as well. They're trying to get some handle on just exactly where we're going, who's going where, when, as a study for the future, for future funding and for future studies and for future planning.
President Lucy, members of the board, for my staff report, I'm going to focus on just a couple of items. First, on Zone 3 Advisory Committee, they meet later in the month, so I'll provide an update at the meeting that follows the Advisory Committee. And I'm sure that Director Guerrero will speak to essentially zero.
Great.
That
fantastic.
We think we have two different approaches. One approach, which we'll be on the phone with Tyler again tomorrow, would be where they could apply some formulas throughout the system and essentially accomplish the objective of combining the two bills and have them take care of it with the computers and not have any incidental costs. That way it's all in the combined bill, no additional postage, no additional envelopes and everything else. The second approach might involve a fair amount of staff time of data input, and I talked to the general manager. And the idea, if that's the case, then we'd be open to sanitation district staff doing that data input, and that way there would be no incidental costs underneath that approach. So we're getting really close to finalizing approach. Obviously, if it's the latter of the two options, we'll talk with sanitation district. I think their existing general manager is through the end of the week, and the interim general manager starts that
Friday.
Formal role on Monday.
So in terms of trying to
figure out an approach that has minimal, if no cost, incidental cost, that we're optimistic on that at this point in time. With respect to communications with the city of Arroyo Grande, I did get a call from the city attorney today regarding their meeting last night in which Ms. Tacker spoke to,
and that is the issue of, it was really about this time last year where your board considered and declined to have WSC do staff extension work. And I think that there's probably been a little bit of miscommunications between their staff and their city council in terms of this idea that they want to increase their staffing, hire new people, hire consultants to do staff extension work. But in Oceano, we're not hiring consultants to do staff work. The participation at NCMA and those other meetings, we're going to those meetings, we're participating, and we're providing a lot of input on a variety of issues. And I think the point I want to emphasize in concluding on that discussion is that my direction from your board last year was if there's technical work efforts that Oceano should be helping to pay for, then I will bring those to your board. The FUGRO is going to be considered later, and that is a technical effort. But in terms of having consultants support staff, that's what you are not, that are technical in nature, that are above and beyond staff extension work, then I'll bring them to your board for consideration.
Mr. Ogan, thank you for bringing that up. I'd like to remind the board, you know, we all discussed this at length last year, and the staff extension also was for additional scopes of work that Northern Cities Management had wanted to take on, which was the characterization of the groundwater basin, for one, that had been included in past contracts but had not been implemented. They were now moving forward and implementing that. And so the projects that were proposed to expand that staff were not areas needed in the Oceano area. And Northern Cities seemed to be understood our position, and they were okay with it. FUGRO, we never disputed. All of us understand the importance of the work that FUGRO does, and that this is court-mandated reports and monitoring.
And I do anticipate that, but those are based on the direction I got from your board, they will be on a case-by-case basis in evaluating the technical merits of what's being proposed. So, you know, again, I think that there's a little bit of confusion there in terms of if they choose to hire consultants to support their staff, that's doesn't obligate your board to hire consultants to provide staff report. And I guess in some ways it's no different than when it comes to legal services. The four agencies don't all take the same approach on legal services either. No. Two of the agencies go with one attorney group, another agency has their own attorney, and of course we have our own attorney. To the mandated annual report that we'll be speaking to on FUGRO, I think that we are being consistent with the other agencies on that matter.
And also, too, is that, you know, some neighbors are able to, you know, fiscally support these things. And when we brought you on, we felt that the experience would compensate for that. Having somebody extremely experienced at the helm that could really contribute to the South County. So I'm surprised that this...
the appropriate time.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Anybody else have anything they want to add to this? Lori, do you have anything?
No, I think it's pretty much been said that we agreed that we weren't going to participate because it wasn't for...
Can you turn on your mic, Lori?
Nuts, it won't stay up. I'm sorry. I said we had discussed it in the past about contracts and participating, and we felt at that time it was not in our best interest to do it because it wasn't in our jurisdiction. And Mary and I both, you know, sat through meeting after meeting after meeting. Her more than I did. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I think it's extremely valuable that we're able to offer experience versus a dollar. So
yeah.
On that note, we're going to move the agenda. Let's see. Director Angelo, do you have anything to report tonight?
No, I was not able to attend the Airport Land Use Commission because of two things scheduled at the same time. I did attend the Aurora Grande meeting this last week and didn't comment or anything, just kind of wanted to see how things were going over there and what was being discussed, that type of thing. And it was interesting. They had a lot of...
Which meeting was that?
Rug Grandy's meeting.
City Council.
Five cities. Oh, not five cities.
Sanitation?
Yeah, that's the one. Sanitation. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine.
That's another time I'm having problems with, too. Okay. Anyway, it was interesting. A lot of comments from the public and a lot of, you know, similar things that we hear here as well. But overall, it was a good meeting.
I did attend, actually, in the middle of August, I got to attend the California Special Districts Association meeting.
Good. Great.
And we got to meet our public affairs coordinator, who will be our direct contact for CSDA and any information on legislation or anything like that. We also got an update from David Church and LAFCO on some of the Paso Water District things. And we also talked about representation for CSDAs on other local agencies. We already sit on LAFCO. We have one seat. And on the Office of Emergency Services, we have three seats there, but we're talking about possibly looking at having a seat on the Council of Governments and on the Air Pollution Control District. So we'll see. Those will possibly need special legislation because they're both governed by state laws. So they're going to be looking into that. We also got an update on garbage and the fact that organics management and the composting services, which we will talk about, or maybe not, we will talk about next time.
28th?
Or, yeah, the 20th of October. It's part of why there will be an increase in the garbage fees. So, but we'll discuss that later. So,
not to be confused with the recycling.
Right. There will be an additional container that we'll get to keep in our kitchens for food waste. So they'll attended the Integrated Regional Water Management Working Group meeting. And they talked about, at that meeting, working with a Central Coast funding area, which includes our county and then Santa Barbara and many counties in the central area of the state. But working together to divvy up among ourselves the money that is designated for us, mm-hmm. so that if we are able to come to an agreement in that area, we will just have to meet the minimum state requirements and we'll have a set amount for our funding area. Great. As opposed to each other about what projects we have going on, so that we can try to get packages of projects together for grant funding. I was very excited to attend Napomo Community Services District's ribbon cutting ceremony for their supplemental water project.
Right.
Yeah, it was really neat. It's been a long time coming and they still have a few more phases to go through, but it was really great to see the project.
Was Eric there? Erica?
I'm not sure. but yeah, that was really great.
Well, congratulations to Napomo for that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Job well done.
Thank you.
Expeditiously, I might say, too.
Although I will say, I did hear when they were talking about on the radio this morning, they said, and this helps to, I don't remember what the exact wording was defeat the chance of seawater intrusion. So that just keeps raising its head.
Mm-hmm. Ugly head, too.
Yep.
So. Karen. Decrease the odds or whatever. I don't remember what the vernacular was.
I wrote my notes because I give such bad reports. This is a Zone 3 Tech meeting on September 3rd. And one of the first issues that came up was the challenge in water quality. Especially, I think, in the Roy Grande area, they're getting flavors in the water, and the water quality is deteriorating. The water is safe to drink, but the impact comes because it is old concentrated water, mm-hmm. i.e. from the bottoms of the lake or from the bottom of the state water project, and it lacks oxygen or aeration. And there's nothing wrong with the water, and it just let it air out a little and the flavor will go away. They also reported that they are now monitoring some more wells, not like the few go not the monitoring wells, but these are wells that are, they're actually ag wells, downstream from the dam, from just past the dam all the way to about the Green Bridge. And they're doing it to monitor directly impacts these agricultural wells right beside the creek. There are six wells with some more they're adding. And a preliminary report on the impact is, quote, all over the place with no specific patterns yet revealed. In Lopez Dam belongs to agriculture and is released downstream for agricultural use and also for environmental use. So they're working with the farmers to monitor and see how this is all going to come about. They also, the tech received a status update on the Lopez Water Project Habitation Conservation HCP study, which involves downstream water availability. So the whole issue is that the dam was built in 1969 and the permit, State Water Resources Board permit, expired in 1986. And they've been involved since that time in trying to get a new application to get a new permit or to modify the old permit. And one of the issues they've looked at is, which I think is really interesting, one of the issues is they have to protect the steelhead, which is an endangered species, which, no matter what people think, is in the Rio Grande Creek. There are steelhead, the creek, getting more gravel for fish spawning. And now they're working to see, and I made this up, what will work for the fish, the creek, and the dam. They're also studying a ton of options for increasing for supplies in case of continued drought. One of those is more land fallowing by farmers. Farmers are already fallowing some of their land. But one way to preserve, conserve water would be for them just not to farm. And one of the farmers there said that the way they would start would be the least productive land usually takes the most water. So they would take out the least productive land and then work toward the most productive land. So, I mean, but the individual farmers would have to deal with it. They were also looking at enhanced conservation, cloud seeding, and a whole bunch of other topics. So it's something for us to talk about while we watch the sky for rain. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. Does anybody have any questions?
Oh, please. Okay.
No. Mr. Guerrero.
Good evening. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District last Wednesday night. That was September 2nd. There were a number of important items on the agenda. One of them was the continuing emergency action regarding the repair to the influent pipeline that got an internal, I don't want to call it a sleeve, but that's probably what it is, internal sleeve going in. The plant is still stressed. Discharge numbers are still in violation, although barely, but they are still in violation, which causes great concern. I do anticipate State Water Board action because of that to continue. But I didn't have the chance to follow up today to see if the status of the pipe, what the status of the pipe was, but the next meeting I'm hopeful that the pipe will be flowing and the pumps will be removed and we'll be back to normal operations, hopefully with TSS and BOD numbers that are within our permit limits. We received a report of the estimated cost and project schedule for a redundancy project by MKN and Associates. It's $19 million, and what that is redundancy for the plant. I think this is an important study to do, but given that we are also looking at doing a satellite treatment plant for potential groundwater recharge or whatever we're going to do it with on the AG trunk line, that'd be the Rio Grande trunk line, I think that given that PISMO is doing a project, that we're doing a project, that we might want to take a step back and look and decide what the best uses of limited resources are for the community as a whole. And so it'll be important to know these numbers and these possibilities, but I think part of the discussion that we need to have in the future is what's the bigger picture. I also have concerns about our current plant that's in the coastal zone, using Morro Bay as a lesson for us. When they lost their permit, that we may run into some Coastal Commission issues with trying to increase our capacity. It's not really increasing our capacity, but increasing redundancy, and it may increase capacity because we'll have more available, but increasing our footprint for sure within the coastal zone may be frowned upon. And so I think this is something that needs to be addressed, or at least considered as part of the public process, so that we can make sure that we whatever plant we build for generations to come, it'll be there. The current plant was built in 63, so it's 52 years old. And Pablo doesn't think that's old, but just kidding.
Good.
I'm not old, too.
Yeah, sounds old to me, either.
No, but it that may be old for a plant. Although it is, except for the stress of the influent pipe, it is running well the last 2 years. We will see, and that's a discussion that I hope to have, that I hope that the board has and brings back, so that we consider all options that are out there without getting into analysis paralysis. There's quite a few issues this time, and I, again, appreciate everybody from Oceano and this board who came out to support and to participate in the discussions last Wednesday night. But we received a status report, a request for additional resources. This was continued over from Carl Knutson regarding the past management practices review, and we approved $22,000 more dollars for Mr. Knutson to continue his investigation. I have not yet met with Mr. Knutson, although I did receive contact from him today, so that was encouraging. There's a couple more items, if you'll bear with me. Because Mr. Sweet has resigned from being the general manager of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, that is effective this Friday, September 11th. Mr. Clemens, the chief plant superintendent, was appointed on a 2-to-1 vote as the acting general manager, and that'll start this Friday when Mr. Sweet steps down. We had consideration of an RFP for a district plant manager position. I think this is an important item because the board discussion is leading towards hiring somebody as a permanent employee full-time because of the projects that we're going to have going. There's a numerous projects. We will see, you know, plant expansion. We will see a lot of resources that are being used. And so there was a discussion about the type of person that could fulfill that position. And so looking forward to that coming back next week at the board meeting. Finally, and I think a reason some people were there, was there was the contract that was proposed by this board at our last meeting to the sanitation district for the provision of billing services. And that was approved on a 2-to-1 vote. It was the least cost alternative that was provided. There were some discussions of going with a private outside billing service and using the county tax roll collector. There's the, again, least cost alternative was to continue going with the Oceana Community Services District. Pavo gave a brief update on some potential, which I think was good news, but that the ancillary costs don't appear that they're going to be significant. So anyway, that will be back on the bill. I do anticipate a back billing, and I think it'll be all on the same bill, Pavo, or what are we looking at?
We are anticipating it will be on the same bill.
Okay.
That's
good.
Great.
That's good to know. Finally, something that is somewhat alarming is that when we did the RFP for legal services, attorneys are backing out of their proposals.
I'm so surprised.
So
Do we have any idea why legal firms of all firms would actually take the time to submit and then frantically backstroke? I want you to speculate.
Okay.
It's a guesstimate.
I think the atmosphere at the sanitation district has been toxic.
And they just don't want.
Why get involved?
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, they.
Time consuming.
Brownstein had their warrant pulled. I think they've been. Well, it's just been toxic. And so hopefully we can change the direction on the toxic atmosphere and move forward in a very positive way to serve the community.
Well, let's just try to move it through. I mean, and not let some of these reoccur, because it does
right, it wears
carry
on people.
Through and affect you in the future.
Right.
I have one little question.
Yes.
Go ahead, Karen.
Can I ask clarification? The redundancy study is going to cost $19 million for
The study's not $19 million. The study was, and I didn't bring those particular numbers, they're in the staff report, was some hundreds of thousands of dollars. But the project proposal, if carried through, there's an anticipated cost of about $19 million.
Thank you.
And so this was one of the reasons, again, that it was important that the billing continue for Oceano so that the plant financially is in a good spot.
Yeah.
If there are loans, that the plant is in a position to repay those. And is
Okay. So. Sorry for my stupidity here.
I might have misspoke, no.
No, you just did.
So thank you. Any other questions?
And you'll keep us posted, right, Matt? It's led by Linda Chipping and Ray, I forgot his last name, from the county, but Linda Chipping is... She's brilliant, and she's a real great leader, and she's just very practical, and she can move an agenda and make something come out of it. So there's of course extensive discussions around the Paso Robles groundwater basin, a new district formation up in the Paso Robles area, and that's going to be ongoing for some time since it. Does involve legislation, and you know, and the debate is still out. There was a great report on DSAL. There's a lot of excitement around PG&E's 500 acre feet of extra desalted water, which I always have to ask people if they've ever tasted desal water. It's it tastes like nothing you've ever drank before.
Really? I don't think I've ever tasted it.
You know, I have troubles describing it. It's kind of like, for me, it's like watered down Jello. It's just I just can't describe it.
I know it's, but like distilled
it's just
water.
Jello without
it's like
the sugar.
Flavorless watered down gelatin.
Like and distilled water.
But anyway, the discussion was real good on DSAL. I was disappointed they didn't take it further and talk about other projects that were happening in the county, but I think over time that the list will continue. There's a drought task force that's been formed. I don't know much about it, but there is a task force. There was a little discussion on the Groundwater Management Act. Carolyn Berg and help me here, Mr. Ogren, and Courtney Howard was the staff for that body for a long time, and they've been moved into another newly formed department, which I don't know what the name of the department is, but I'm sure it's a good one. Oh, it has to do with the IRWAM. You know, and they did discuss the regional collaboration and getting, you know, Monterey, Santa Barbara, San Luis as one region, and they've tried to force a relationship in the past, and I think they're just going to try to naturally let it happen this time. So I thought that was a great strategy. And so there was a lot of discussing water, all the water issues. I think it's good for anybody who can attend that meeting. I do have it scheduled for my book, if anybody else can attend it, I think it would be extremely valuable and important. And plus, you have a good sense of where your supervisors are when it comes to water, when it comes to development, when it comes to large building projects that you think might have an impact on you or your neighborhood. So it's a well worth meeting. So, and on that note, I don't have anything much else to report. Is there any public comment on any directors or outside committee reports? Ms. Tucker.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I would like to speak to the director's reports. In particular, the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and I'm unclear. Mr. Ogren and Mr. Guerrero, you said that you're going to bill the two cycles in one bill. What I didn't hear is what you're going to charge the sanitation district for that, because the direction I understood was they were really only willing to pay for one billing cycle, and that would be the $3,600 number versus two billing cycles, which would be over $7,300. So I would like that question answered. With regard to the Michael Nunley report and the redundancy project, I'm seldom in agreement with Mr. Guerrero, but on this one, I am in full agreement that an analysis should be done when IDEA is a satellite plant that would scalp off some 800,000 gallons of sewage a day, changing the constituents that ultimately reach that plant, and that plant would need further upgrade because the concentrations are different. So more money would have to be put into that plant above the $19 million that's proposed right now. What was in question last week was the Coastal Commission issues. The consultant suggested that a mitigated negative declaration was all that was necessary for that project. I don't know that they knew, and I've got confirmation today, and I will be jurisdiction for the Coastal Commission, so you will have to get their approval. And that is a high bar, especially in light of sea level rise and the proximity of the plant near the ocean. So I think we need to have that larger conversation. As for the RFP for legal services, you know, Brownstein represents Golden State Water. I believe they have the same conflict that Mr. Seitz raised with Napomo CSD and the Santa Maria Valley Groundwater Basin. The other attorney that represented the city of Santa Maria would also be included in conflicts with the Santa Maria Valley Groundwater Basin. The other one, I don't know if they've dropped out, but I know they represent Morro Bay and the city of Lompoc, the closest ones that they represent. So maybe those conflicts were brought to their attention, and that's why.
Mrs. Austin.
Hi, Linda Austin, Oceana. I just wanted to comment on the Five Cities Fire Authority report. There was a fire last Friday, I believe it was, in the dunes, and I just want to commend how the actions of the Five Cities Fire Authority, and in particular Captain Craig Angelo, who was able to direct the fire trucks where to go to get to the fire, because no one knew how the roads to the back roads to the area, and he had the gate open and everything, and they were in there before I even got home. So Cal Fire also, their helicopter came very quickly and stopped the fire. So I want to just thank the fire. I think they're doing a great job. I watched them myself there, and it was really nice to see. And see, on another item, the NCMA, when you were talking about you're getting consultants, that is the one thing that we were so happy about hiring Mr. Ogren, was because we wouldn't be paying all those consultants like we've done in the past. And so, you know, the people that talk about the salary, well, it all comes out. You know, we would have a lot of other bills if it wasn't for his expertise in these certain things that he's been doing. And so I think you did a very smart, wise thing when you made that decision a year ago or whenever it was. Thank you.
And thank you for bringing up the fire. Actually, I was able to go out to Linda's house, and you know, Cal Fire was sitting on the strands, and the fire was just directly behind the dune, behind your garage, and then they've gotten to that fire from the strand. They couldn't have, you know, and some of the trucks did not know how to get up on the levee, you know, until you were able to, you know, go out and open the gate for them and stuff. So this is one of those times where it's so important to have local people, you know, in those types of situations. They would have never made it to that fire, and it would have burned out of control, and unfortunately it would have hit a home. They think it's just out in the dune, but there are people who live out in some of those dunes, and so I just want to thank them. Go ahead, Karen.
One point of clarification. That fire was outside of the Five Cities Fire Authority District. It was in the Cal Fire District. So the Five Cities Fire Authority responded on a mutual aid. Just making sure we know who, because I didn't report on it, but it wasn't our fire. It was in our houses, but, I mean, our, yeah.
And also Parks and Recs was down there, but they, too, were a little baffled on how to physically get to that fire. So with the helicopter swooping out of the lagoon and direction, it was contained. So
I appreciate the consolidated effort of Cal Fire and Five Cities Fire Authority.
So. Yeah. It was scary. I didn't realize how close that fire really was, you know.
My customers were telling me the water coming out of the lagoon was pretty dark and stinky. That was
well. It's well fertilized now out in that area.
they were impressed by that. So.
Okay. Is there any more public comment? Anybody else that'd like to comment? Hearing none, let's move right along. Okay. I have to say that Ms. Pastor's testimony has that bridge on my mind, so I want it. I want to get home and send an email. So thanks for bringing up the bridge again. Okay, so consent agenda items. I'll entertain a motion with a correction for 8C.
I'll move to approve with the modified 8C.
Public comment on the consent agenda.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. Public comment for any items on the consent agenda? No, hearing none.
All right. That is the modification to 8C.
Okay.
My second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Abstain? No. Passes 5-0. Blah, blah, blah.
This is on 9A, and thank you, Tony. And I think we'll be taking public comment after the presentation.
Correct.
What I've done is I've put together a PowerPoint presentation on the 2014 annual monitoring report for the Northern Cities Management Area. This is essentially a receive and file action item for your board. The two substantive actions for this particular agenda item I'm going to cover real quickly before moving into the 15 annual monitoring report, and that proposal is extremely consistent with the 2014 approach. We're also paying the same percentage as we did in 2014, and that percentage is based on our percentage of rights to pump groundwater in the Northern Cities Management Area. In addition to that recommendation for the 2015 annual report, there's also a recommendation for a little bit more than $3,000, and that would be our share of replacing a number of transducers. The transducers are in the monitoring wells. I'll talk about those in context of the presentation. But essentially, transducers are in monitoring wells, and they provide real-time data associated with levels, temperature, and then conductivity, which is help. It's an indicator of water quality. Those two items combined are a few thousand dollars over the line item in the budget for NCMA expenses. At this point in time, I think it's important that, you know, working with the other agencies, Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Pismo, that it's important that these two items move forward. Really, in working through the Finance Committee, it's third quarter and fourth quarter where we'll have a better understanding of exactly where we stand. So given the overall size of the budget, I don't have any, you know, qualms in making that recommendation right now. And I think it's extremely important we move forward with both of the actions in coordination with Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Pismo. Moving then into the presentation itself, this is just the simple cover page. But the annual reports are already publicly available through a number of the different agencies. But anybody who really wants to learn about the details associated with the pumping and the management activities and the various details associated with the groundwater basin, it's a wonderful resource document. So in the contents itself, there's the executive summary, always a good thing for the quick read. Stipulations were adopted in around 2005, I believe. Gives good background. There's a basin description. I'll touch on that lightly. Water and supply and demand information. And then there's comparisons of water supply versus demand. And in the presentation, I'm going to spend a little bit more time on this because especially now it's relevant in terms of what are the challenges that we're all facing with the drought and as it continues. There's discussion about management activities, although in management activities should change moving forward. And then, you know, with a plethora of information, it's got references and tables and figures and appendix. And I, in the PowerPoint here, I highlight a few of those. So moving in, Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Oceano, and a fairly significant amount of agriculture that is just to the south of Oceano. And then there's the Napoma Mesa Management Area, has a number of different suppliers. The municipal supplier, which is only one of several water purveyors on the Mesa, but that's Napomo CSD, and Director Blackburn had the good opportunity to go to their groundbreaking ceremony because they've now completed an intertie with the city of Santa Maria and are able to bring in some water from the city of Santa Maria. The big yellow area is the Santa Maria Valley Management Area, and it actually includes portions of San Luis Obispo County, but basically in the lower land areas that are lower elevation along the river and below the Mesa area. So, lack of a better term, it's sort of the floodplain area of the Santa Maria River. So three different management areas, and then this and a few other slides. What I like to do in these types of presentations is not just talk about what happened in 2014, but what are some of the things that we might anticipate seeing or occurring in discussions as we move forward. And so will the basin boundary change? And the reason why I put that out there as a question rhetorically is because the new groundwater legislation was passed last year, and that groundwater legislation speaks to groundwater sustainability and the requirements of agencies moving forward on how to make sure we have sustainable groundwater basin. And water resources has specific boundary descriptions, and for the Santa Maria Valley groundwater basin, it does not match the adjudicated boundaries. For example, there's an area that's just east of Arroyo Grande as you approach Lopez Dam that is within DWR's boundary of the groundwater basin, but it's not within the adjudicated boundaries. So how is that area, which is outside of the adjudicated boundaries but within, and that's just one, there's a couple of other areas as well, one near Napomo, how's that going to be addressed? Because if it's outside of the adjudicated NDWR's boundaries, how might that be addressed? Now, one of the things is maybe DWR modifies their boundaries. Maybe the adjudicated boundaries. Maybe special action is taken on that fringe area, for the lack of a better word. But the idea is, with the new legislation on groundwater basins and the fact that the state's boundary description does not match up with the adjudicated boundary, we know that that's going to have to be addressed in the future. It's a relatively small area. Arroyo Grande does pump from that area and does not count against their NCMA pumping. And there's a chart that shows how much they pump, and it's a relatively nominal amount. So again, might the boundaries change? I'm not sure if it'll change in the adjudication, but there are boundary issues that will be addressed in the future. Secondly, this slide shows where the current pumping is happening. And the different colors are for the different agencies, Arroyo Grande, Grover, Pismo, and Oceano again. And there's no real strong discussion. Again, at the bottom right, I put in a question, will pumping locations change? And there's no strong movement right now to discuss changes in pumping locations. But Pismo Beach is moving forward with, you know, they had the feasibility on a reclamation project. South County is going to be doing a feasibility. And depending on how your injection wells or how those reclamation projects move forward, there is always the possibility that pumping locations change. Another example is in Los Osos, they have specific strategies to move wells further inland, same level of seawater intrusion as they have in Los Osos. But I always like to look at these maps and look at where the pumping is occurring and keep in mind what happens if we need to move the location of groundwater wells, because for potable supplies through municipal agencies, those are expensive projects. Again, nothing right now, but will the future identify any need to change pumping locations? The groundwater monitoring, this is an illustration of where groundwater monitoring is occurring in the NCMA areas. And we are located right about here right now. And so one of the main monitoring areas is right across the street from this office. And there's another one on Pier Avenue. And those are very good for us because being in close proximity to our pumping locations, if those monitoring wells start picking up any seawater intrusion, then that's sort of the canary in the coal mine for us in terms of risks to our wells. And our wells in Oceano are closer to the ocean than the other agencies' wells, so it's good to have monitoring locations that are really good for our wells. The monitoring wells across the street from this office are also at different depths in order to recognize that groundwater basins themselves have different stratas associated with them, so we're able to monitor the different levels in the groundwater basin. The area of concern and the question, will monitoring improve in the future? And certainly that is a goal that we have. We've been in discussion with the county. And last year when the Board of Supervisors considered the surplus water issue for Zone 3, they also adopted a resolution to work with NCMA and MMA, the MESA, in order to improve things like groundwater monitoring and groundwater basin evaluations. President Lucy mentioned the characterization study, and Phase 1 is complete, and that was grant-funded. So improving the overall modeling of the groundwater basin has moved forward with grant money, and with county participation and other agency participation, we're going to be evaluating next steps in the groundwater monitoring efforts and how to minimize costs to our ratepayers. But one of the areas that sort of just jumps out at me as being a significant hole, if you will, in the monitoring is that this is a couple miles, this what I'm pointing at right now is a couple miles down the beach, and then the one that's near our office. So we have a relatively significant gap here along the coast in monitoring wells, and it's in close proximity when you go inland to where the ag pumping is. So my concern is that pumping activities that aren't Oceano pumping activities but are doing others could potentially bring in the risk of seawater intrusion kind of below our monitoring wells, and creating challenges for us on the southerly side is something that you know, without monitoring wells, we just don't really know what's going on in that area. The challenge of putting monitoring wells on the beach themselves, though, is getting drilling rigs out there and everything else. It's very expensive. So if we're able to, part of our discussions is, can we do some monitoring wells on the backside of the dunes where it's easy, it's more accessible for drilling equipment, and it wouldn't be as costly. But that's certainly one of the areas where we would like to see improvements in our monitoring efforts. Again, a lot of this is work in progress. But will monitoring improve? Will the overall modeling of the groundwater basin improve? And those discussions are ongoing with at the NCMA level.
Mr. Ogren?
Yes.
I have a quick question. The project you just talked about, is that in the sphere of influence? Is it in the NCMA?
Yeah, so this whole green area is NCMA.
Okay.
And NCMA includes, you know, some significant agricultural pumping in.
Because I remember early of the area, but that was rectified. But so I just wanted to ask that question.
Okay. So, you know, again, working on the groundwater modeling and monitoring information, the County Board of Supervisors was supportive last fall, and things take time, but all of the agencies are working with the county, and I would anticipate some items might be coming through the Zone 3 Advisory Committee moving forward to the county and recommendations at the next meeting. I haven't seen an agenda yet, so, you know, part of this point is the ability to manage groundwater basins effectively is still driven based on data, and so we have to be able to. The report also discusses annual precipitation. And certainly groundwater levels are directly tied to how much rain it has. Will it rain? We've got show ocean temperatures, and there is a lot of people who believe we're going to, somewhere in California, I should say, we're going to get a lot of rain. But where it might actually occur is another question. One of the things that's unique about this drought and what's being characterized as California's worst drought is that it's hit the whole state. We've had droughts in the past that only hit portions of California. It's a big state. So whether or not there is big rain this winter or not, and whether or not it hits the Central Coast, we're going to have to wait and see. But the report does, you know, it tracks annual precipitation. Last year, I think we were at about two-thirds of the average. And what's startling here is the idea that it's really 12 out of the last 13 years where we've had below average rainfall. So even though 2013 was one of the lowest years in record, the lowest on this map, but I had done some research, and this 2013, there was about 6 or 7 years over the last 135 years or so that were that low. But more significant than a single year is the fact that we've had 12 out of 13 years with below average rainfall. So,
well, it looks like it's about 13 out of 15. I'm not counting the numbers there, but
yeah, if you add in these other two,
if you go back, right,
yeah,
there was 2 good years out of about the last 10 or 15.
You know, there's some here where you show this is a cycle of many years where you have well above average rainfall. And you can start picking out some cycles in here.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens, you know, in 2015 and beyond. Cautiously optimistic but still cautious predictions of an El Nino. They saw some warming of the ocean temperatures, not nearly like what they're seeing this year.
You had a unique term for it.
Pardon me?
You had a unique term for it.
Cautiously optimistic? Or?
No, it was like an engineer's dream or something.
Okay. but by the time the rainy season actually, again, it's got to be one of those situations where it's wait and see, will it rain? And if so, is it going to come to our area? This gets into then a little bit more of the technical slides, and there's just two that I'm going to cover. NCMA Sentry Wells, NCMA Monitoring Wells, by another name. And it's called trigger levels because once the groundwater drops below a certain level, then we in NCMA are supposed to be taking action in order to reduce groundwater pumping. And in fact, NCMA has significantly reduced groundwater pumping. I'll show that in a few slides. But down here is where we have water quality information. And I know that for Oceano, one of our concerns is how valid is this? Because this is the spike that is attributable to seawater intrusion, which happened in about 2009. And I think that our position in Oceano has been it's an indication of possible seawater and surface water that had gotten down into the well shaft and created poor water quality reads. And what happened after that particular read is that it rained a lot in 2010, and the numbers dropped back down. So was the improvement in water quality because of rain and pushing back seawater, or is the improvement in water quality because the wells had been sealed and so there was no more? Because one is currently we're seeing groundwater levels drop, actually now below what we were seeing prior to 2009. So we know that the risk of seawater intrusion is definitely increasing as we see groundwater levels low. Also is when you see this area, when we look at graphs, when there's areas, so there's a line that shows what groundwater levels is happening, what's occurring to groundwater levels. But then there's an area on the graph, and that represents volume. And there's not a specific quantification, but prior to 2009, this area in here is much larger than what we're seeing here. And what that generally tells us is that prior to 2009, we had more of a loss of actual quantity in groundwater. We're seeing groundwater levels drop, but working with FUGRO, we're seeing some interesting statistics that a lot of it makes sense, but a little bit of it is startling. And my point here is that there's a big area on this graph here, and if there was a large volume loss of groundwater, then that could have contributed to this peak right here in degradation. It could have resulted in seawater intrusion. We're not seeing that same volume lost yet, but what we are seeing is groundwater levels reoccurring at low levels, and we know that the risk of seawater intrusion is going up. But the 2014 report clearly states that seawater intrusion has not happened yet, not at the end of 2014, and we haven't seen it yet this year either. So it's one of those things we need to continue to watch. This data and developing the data is extremely important. It's not always going to give us a perfectly predictive tool on what's going to happen, but the more that we are monitoring and the more that we're developing data, the better we will be able to manage the basin as time goes by. This graph, shorter duration, basically the same information but for less years. And what this shows here with all the fuzzy information is those transducers. A lot more data because the data that we have, the more fresh, the newer the data is, the more reliable it is. The further we go back in time, the less reliable the data is. And we can just see in this period of 2007 through around 2009, roughly, this says two measurements per year, which meant that through the county primarily, those well levels were getting measured twice a year, and that's it. And that's the only data that there was to work with. But now the measurements are happening, and with the automated transducer data, we don't know, you know, when or if seawater intrusion is going to happen. But the ability, if it does happen, to look at the data and see the conditions under which it occurs will do nothing but help us improve with the management efforts in the future. So really, again, good information in this report, good development of data, even more to come. It provides the NCMA demand over the last 10 years. I thought this was a good slide because it's a real quick place where anybody can go and see what the demand for the different agencies were, total urban demand, applied irrigation, rural water. So we have a few rural water, like we've got a mobile home park and some others in the area that are tracked, relatively nominal in comparison to everything. The applied irrigation are really estimates based on crop types, number of acres, and what their evapotranspiration rates are, because if a particular agriculture outfit happens to over-irrigate, then that water goes back into the groundwater basin. It's true more so in our area than in some other areas. But that's why we see the same number in many years, is because it's the same number of acres and it's the same basic crop pattern. So these are estimates, as opposed to for the agencies, those are actual metered and read off of mechanical devices. Still, it does a good job of tracking everybody's usage. So total urban reduction, I just did some calculations as putting this together, 15% reduction in demand from 2013, and 2013 is the year that the governor is basing his direction in comparisons to, and 25% reduction from peak. So the peak production for NCMA urban was in 2007 at almost 9,000 acre feet. And so what those two numbers to me reflect is overall, you know, community-wide conservation is definitely happening even before the current drought, and that's where we see the 25% reduction from peak, and 15% from 2014 back to 2013. Similar results for Oceano, although not quite, approximately 10% reduction from 2013. 2014 was a 10% reduction from 2013 for Oceano, and 15% from peak, which was also in 2007. So even before the current drought, Oceano customers have been conserving, and with the drought, that conservation has picked up. We reported that the first billing period after the conservation rates had been adopted by your board, the customers in Oceano had conserved just over 30%. We've revised that calculation. It's really around 25%. The difference between the over 30 and the 25% was that in that billing period, we actually had about 54 days in that billing period. It was a little bit shorter. It wasn't a 60 days. So for Arroyo Grande, this 69.3, that points to they're pumping out of what's called the Pismo Formation, and that's the area east of NCMA, but west of, you know, between essentially Arroyo Grande and Lopez Dam. And it's the area that I think is in DWR's groundwater basin, but outside of NCMA. Again, a relatively nominal amount in comparison to overall pumping, but AG does have some pumping east of the city, or east of CMA report. All of our surface water was identified as being Lopez Lake water, and on September 22nd is the board's final action to do some recharacterization, where Pismo's draws from Lopez Lake will go down and their draws from state water will go up. Likewise, for Oceano, it'll reclassify some of our Lopez Lake draws and cause them state water. And it's just basically the idea that the county actually had more than 303 acre feet of state water delivered through the Lopez system in 2014. And so those corrections are supposed to be with the Board of Supervisors on September 22nd. Again, this is where we get the water from in NCMA. Drilling down into the groundwater pumping itself, what this chart really does is it shows on the right how much did each of the agencies actually pump out of their groundwater allocations. Arroyo Grande's was the lowest at 3.9%, and even if you threw in their pumping out of that easterly area, they're still going to be well underneath 10% of, if that had been included in their number. Grover is the one who had to hit it the hardest at 36. We and Pismo were almost the same at 29, and then Oceano was at 28.8%, bringing down our groundwater pumping. But with the groundwater levels getting as low as they have been, I'm really concerned about bringing the risk of seawater intrusion. And we have enough state water allocation this year where we don't really need to hit the well. So we're still using the well somewhat, but on a very limited basis. And I would expect that in 2015, our percentage of our allocation is going to be lower again than the 28.8. For all the urban users, it was about 23%. And then when we add in applied agriculture and some of the rural water users, it was about 42% of the groundwater allocation. And I saw that Director Blackburn was maybe having a question.
It was actually just a comment, but I noticed in the report that it said that like, kudos to everyone.
And, you know, and when we see this low value, this low volume of groundwater pumping, but we also see the groundwater levels going way down. Then the hope for some relief from an El Nino has to increase, because I think a couple of the points on upcoming slides is, where's the water going to come from in 2016 or 2017 if the drought continues?
That also, too, is not to, is that Oceano didn't pump for 6 years our 900 acre feet allocated.
Right, our full amount.
So it did.
And it's still going down.
You know, and it's still going down, but yeah. When I read it, Grover, I mean, I know that their portfolio is very, very limited. And I'm wondering, you know, what kind of help, you know, are we going to...
Which is a significantly lower than what their allocation is, and how much Lopez water. But if the drought continues, I think it's pretty obvious that everybody is stressed, but Pismo and Oceano, who have state water, are less stressed. And so I've got a few slides coming up that will talk about that in an overview. So anyway, again, on this one, on groundwater pumping in 2014, Table A out of the NCMA report, good information that shows what is the level that everybody is actually pumping out. So, you know, reduced groundwater pumping and the risk of seawater intrusion means that we know that there's a limitation on how much we can rely on the groundwater basin right now. I've read some of the old historical reports dating back into, you know, the 1960s and 1950s, when all the work was being done on feasibility and should Lopez Dam be built. And the phrase that I keeps catching in my memory is that once we've had enough rain in order to fill up Lopez Lake, then we should have enough rain to recharge the groundwater basin. Now, with urbanization that's happened over the last several decades and the increased runoff factor that you have with urbanization, will that same belief hold true in the future? We'll only have to see. But the idea is, current sources of supply, we have to watch them very closely, because groundwater pumping has its limitations and there is risks of seawater intrusion. With respect to Lopez deliveries, there is the low reservoir response plan that's been adopted, and that plan specifically is reducing by 10% the amount of water that's being allocated to Oceano and Pismo and Grover and Aurora Grande in 2015. And unless we see some increases in storage levels in 2016, those allocations out of Lopez can even go further. Now, each of the agencies has, in addition to their normal annual allocation, has some water stored in Lopez, and that's also going to be illustrated a little bit. So there's a, you know, we're in a better shape because the amount of water that we have stored in comparison to our annual allocation is really good. If we had no state water allocation next year, in 2016, we would be able to live within our Lopez, the amount of water that we have stored in Lopez. If it's a dry winter, though, we have to anticipate that we're going to have to come back and do some more measures in order to really mandate further reductions. Right now, conservation is sort of based on those rate structures and the customer's willingness to pay. And conservation-oriented rate structures do a great job. But if we are put in a situation where we have this drought continues and we have to get down to health and safety numbers, which are 850 to 55 gallons per capita per day, that would require more action by your board. The point being is the water that we already have stored in Lopez will help us tremendously. And I'm going to touch at the very end here a little bit about that low reservoir response plan. A couple of your board members asked me to make sure to cover it in a little bit more detail, and so I will at the end. The third source of issues to watch is state water. And the good news associated with state water is the Department of Water Resources just came out with a revised opinion that says in 96% of the years, they can deliver at least 20% of the allocation.
And that doesn't give comfort to a lot of people in the state, 20% allocation. But because of the unique nature of our county's allocation, if the state delivers 20%, then the county can meet 100% of our needs out of state water. And that's really where our reliability is the strongest right now. Now, the state provides that estimate because they're currently in the Delta operating under emergency operations rules. The State Water Board has modified water quality parameters. There's some people who can actually taste some of the additional salt that's coming through the State Water Project. But that reliability on state water, it's dependent on both the emergency operations that are occurring in the Delta as well as our county's excess allocation. So if either of those were to change, then that could be problematic. The other thing that in our contract on state water is that the Board of Supervisors does have the ability to modify if they declare health and safety issues. So that will be, it's obviously the power that the county has, because if the drought is prolonged and it's extremely bad, then they're going to have to try to meet health and safety needs of multiple agencies. So our allocation can get reduced, but the ability to meet our health and safety needs, though, would still be there. So big concerns about ability on groundwater pumping if the drought continues, continuing concerns about Lopez. State water is the best thing that we have going right now, but there are two particular issues we have to watch on that, and that's the emergency operations of the Delta and the county's excess allocation. Issues to watch in a changing future. So reduced groundwater pumping right now really points to its reliability, and as Director Guerrero mentioned, South County Sanitation District is working on, you know, recycling reclamation, as is PISMO, and it's my general belief that it's really recycling and reclamation that will help firm up the reliability of the groundwater supplies in the NCMA in the Five Cities area. Very important for the future. And that recycling and reclamation is where the grant money is getting focused as well, because a lot of people in the state recognize that when we're discharging it out to the ocean, we're not reusing it. Whether, you know, the challenges of those projects are still important, but still it's sort of the low-hanging fruit that's out there in order to help with the groundwater reliability.
Right, those are exactly my comments, Bob. I wanted to join those because I think that's an important message for the community, that instead of wasting this resource, to reclaim it is just a huge necessity.
That's why it's so important that, you know, Rio Grande, Grover, Oceano, and South County San all get on the same page in order to move those work efforts, because they are significant work efforts. Coordination with PISMO on their plant is important. Director Guerrero spoke to the idea of, you know, essentially how are the different alternatives going to work out, that if there is a project that happens to the existing plant for South County, and then we're looking at a reclamation project for South County, and PISMO is looking at a reclamation project. Each of those three projects are about $20 million. I mean, real rough ballpark, $20 million. You add them up together, that's $60 million, and it begs to whether or not some sort of regional solutions are going to be better, you know, money better spent. And certainly I think that while there's been certain concepts that have been put on the table so far, and those concepts are well-founded concepts, I think as these efforts move forward, there's going to be other alternatives like regional alternatives or sub-regional, you know, Five Cities alternatives that will also have to be addressed so that we make the smartest decisions as we move forward. Lopez Reservoir itself, you know, that supply is pretty well fixed. It's subject to the Habitat Conservation Plan. Vice President White had mentioned that the downstream releases benefit both agriculture as well as the environment. So there is always, and I've been saying it for a long time, that the risk to the municipalities is the reduction in available surplus water. So whereas some of the agencies are really relying on surplus water today, after the HCP and all the environmental flow regimes are established, there is a risk that less surplus water will be available to the agencies. And so we are currently reinitiating our contract discussions. And one of the things that, there's a lot of different issues on the Lopez contract, but the one that I've identified here is establishing storage rights and then other provisions to improve the utilization of existing facilities. Because throughout the state, we talk about the need for more storage facilities, more off-stream storage, don't have them on the rivers and impact the environment. And there's been some large ones, both in Southern California and Northern California, that have been constructed that are off the main watersheds but provide significant storage. And California has to be addressing more storage issues. But then we have a reservoir like Lopez that right now is, you know, approximately a third full, which means that it's approximately two-thirds empty, and we have excess state water supplies. And so how do we more effectively utilize that existing Lopez supplies? And as a real quick description here, when we develop dams and we develop these water supply projects, they're contractually based because we got to figure out who's going to have the rights, who's going to have to pay for them and everything. And there is a certain extent that the Lopez contracts are a bit antiquated. And by that I mean that if any given year one of the agents from the olden days of water in California, where if you didn't put it to beneficial use, you kind of had to make it available to other agencies. Well, now that we're in a, you know, in an era where the water supply is not as plentiful in comparison to demand, we all think about multi-year water resource strategies, not single-year strategies. So I would like to see storage rights established at Lopez so that if we don't use our water in a particular year and we're doing multi-year water resource planning, that we can store some of it. It doesn't mean that we have need to have an unlimited right to store water in Lopez, but to have a right to store 2 or 3 years to store other water, like state water, in Lopez via exchanges, then again, that's going to help maximize the utilization of an existing facility. And that whole theory is just like a manufacturing plant. Anybody who builds a manufacturing plant wants it to operate 24/7. You know, you have three shifts, 3 8-hour shifts, it doesn't matter. But if that manufacturing plant, how do we better utilize the facilities that we've already built? So I think that there's some opportunity there, and I look forward to working with Grover and Arroyo Grande and Pismo in the county in exploring some of those options to better utilize existing facilities. State water, I put drought buffer down there because we are one of the agencies that doesn't have any drought buffer. The benefit of drought buffer, if nothing else, is to increase our ability to store water, state water, in San Luis Reservoir. That's certainly been helping Pismo out. Improved groundwater monitoring efforts, I touched on that already. County efforts are going underway, and we'll be reporting back to your board on some of those discussions. And then the adjudication and future management efforts. I'm not really speaking on those because those are efforts that I generally consider to be more in the realm of the confidentiality of the adjudication. And we know that there is case management conferences and other discussions that are going on regarding the adjudication and future management efforts. But there's no doubt that there's a lot of people who are focusing in on does the management as established in the stipulation in the near future. So a number of issues to watch. What I didn't put on here was other supplemental supplies. Obviously, the Diablo Canyon water might bring in a benefit, especially to Arroyo Grande or Grover Beach. There would be details that we needed to address there in the years to come.
Mr. Ogren, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
I'll finish. Well,
so a few to wrap up, and then...
Go ahead, wrap up.
Okay, so this here then shows, table 6, shows the baseline allotments by each of the agencies. It doesn't include surplus water out of Lopez. And what I did is I just did a quick calculation at the bottom that says, so out of their baseline, Arroyo Grande last year, their demand was 73% of their baseline. Pismo's was 62%. Grover's was 61, Oceano's was only 41. And with all of these supplies having a different level of reliability or a different level of concern We know that Lopez is getting cut back 10%. The groundwater allotment we're pumping at, on average, you know, something under 30%. That each of these have different reliability factors. But so these percentages I calculated did not take into account reliability. It just takes into account what was the total demand in comparison to our total baseline. The big point being is that when we our total demand in Oceano was only 41%, clearly enforces the point that even though there's water supply reliability problems across the board, when our demand is that low in comparison to our baseline, it further corroborates the fact that we have better ability to get through this drought, and thankful, you know, many ways to the board of directors that, you know, was on this Oceano board many, many years ago and the foresight that they had. And then I was asked on the low reservoir response plan, because that was a significant 2014 accomplishment. All the agencies considered it, approved it, and the County Board of Supervisors. And for, you know, general public knowledge, the low reservoir response plan was the agencies coming together and figuring out how are we going to manage Lopez Dam agriculture. And as a result, this was the plan that was developed. And that is, it's dependent on storage levels in the lake. And so the municipal cutbacks then is that when we hit 20,000 acre feet, I'm sorry, at 20,000, there's no. When we hit 15,000 acre feet, municipalities are cut back 10%, and that's what we were doing in 2015. And then it, as the reservoir gets down to 10,000, then municipalities get cut more, and 5,000 we get cut more, and then at 4,000, essentially, we get no more water. We get to store whatever has been allocated us during the LRRP, and that's been an important strategy for Oceano. And then the contrast here is on the agricultural cutbacks or downstream releases. What Ag wanted is that they really wanted more water up front. So they have a relatively smaller cutback early, but then they take a plan to put a crop in the ground. They've got to make sure that they have the water. So they wanted really focus in on the early, you know, now, and if the drought continues, then they recognize that they're going to have to cut back on some of their production. Overall, then, under the LRRP, Lopez use, anybody can go in here and look at these numbers and how much did each of the agencies use in comparison to basically the allocations. And what this shows you is that in 2014, the agencies overall were relying on not just their annual allocation, but some of their surplus water that had been saved. Same way, and so 2016 and 2017 are going to prove to be a lot more stressful for agencies if we don't get a good winter. And that concludes it. A lot of information, a lot of details in that report. That's about the best I could do is summarizing it, but I'd be glad to answer any follow-up questions.
Just two things, Mr. Overton.
Your mic's not on, Mary.
Thank you so much for doing that. While you were doing the report, I went to our website to see if we could easily...
agenda item, and we'll get everything posted then in the
okay,
next few
so
days.
Okay, so since it is a long, lengthy report...
Yeah.
We'll make it so it's very visible and people can access it, because I was surfing through and trying to find it. And then secondly, too, is that I think it's a good time as any to point out, you know, that the state does have rebate programs and
yes.
and conservation programs, and that was pretty accessible on the site, too. So,
and we will make sure to get some of that information in an insert for the next bill, too.
Yeah, most definitely.
Bring it up.
But, yeah it's a good report, and I think Fugaro does write a good report.
Report?
Mm-hmm.
And it says flat out, the water purveyor is overriding the Pomo Management Association should limit or discontinue issuances of will-serve letters that would increase water demand in the area. It says right there in the report that that's what they should do. Now, that's nice, it's written in a report, but...
So then what happens?
So they're taking our water, or not taking our water, but they're endangering our water is, we're at the front of the water pool where the ocean laps over. And so they're endangering our water. And it's nice that the report makes this point, but there's, what can you do about it?
So one of the things that's there's a couple of things to recognize. One is that this is a report prepared for NCMA, and NMMA and the Santa Maria Valley also have their annual reports, and they're all been submitted to the judge. So there's a certain amount of this report, and on the point that you're specifically pointing out, that represents general opinions of the NCMA. And so that's part of this report telling the judge what we think about certain things.
Okay.
Now, we can anticipate that NMMA may not agree with all of the things that we say in here, and they might attribute certain things to other factors, like the fact that it's not raining. They'll generally say that recharge from Los Barros Creek is what's creating the divide, you know, what helps with creating a water divide between NMMA. Any actions with the judge, we sort of say what we want to say, but that's... details are really covered in the closed session adjudication items. So the report comes out and expresses some opinions on the other management areas, but really addressing those things or addressing them with the judge as might be appropriate and through discussions amongst the different agencies in closed session, and then, you know, doing the attorney thing and talking to the judge. And so... we'll see how that all evolves.
We spend more money for lawyers to...
Just no doubt about that. The disadvantage is that they're extremely expensive to go through the judicial process. Now, which is faster, legislative approaches or judicial approaches? And I think that's going to depend on where you're at and how much people want to cooperate. You know, took significant action last year. It's still going to be 5, 10, 15 years before we really see... how that legislative push, what the meaning and what it is, you know, occurring.
Yeah.
But the nice thing about that is the legislative approach is much more in an open forum and talking about issues, even if it's not as precise sometimes in data. You know, we know that legislative issues can get emotional a little bit, and the courts are, do they do a good job of taking the emotions out somewhat? I mean, not entirely, but much more diligent on the fact finding, but much more expensive. So.
Yeah, one more little question. Madam Chair, one more little question. These changes in boundaries, does that have any impact on the Los Barros Basin?
Territory was outside of the adjudication, but within the Department of Water Resources boundaries. But I can get back, provide information to the board on.
Because Napomo Creek is in the Napomo Basin, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something there. The area, of course, that I was focusing in as was on the NCMA area, and knowing, you know, where those boundary differences are.
Yeah.
But certainly,
and
it's
the valley.
Well known.
No.
And. Well, you know, almost in, well, Edmund Valley is not adjudicated right now, so. It is part of, you know, it's got a groundwater basin that DWR is watching as well. But in terms of the differences between the adjudicated boundary of the basin and what the Department of Water Resources shows as the basin boundary, it's hard to predict what's going to happen there, but I can definitely identify the areas up on the mesa that also have that, yeah, sort of the no man's land type of an issue. What's going to happen with this area?
So are they moving east then?
Yeah, they're all in the east, or if it's Napomo Creek area. But we know
Creek
that
is already in there. It's already got to be in.
Yeah.
Napomo's because it.
But I'll double check that.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I'll shut up.
Anybody else have any other questions?
I wanted to piggyback on President Lucy's comments about the cash for grass. And is there, in the rebate programs, anything that deals with like high-efficiency washing machines or gray water?
We are doing programs like that, but I'm not. The only two that I'm aware of on a statewide basis are the cash, you know, the turf
cash for grass
removal,
and then the one toilet per household retrofit.
I'll let you in on my wash machine secret after the meeting.
Okay. Well, thank you, Pablo, for the report.
We develop excess revenues because we don't hit our conservation target, then your board's already dedicated any excess revenues we might generate to conservation programs, and so it would be in your discretion to allocate those to washing machines or other types of appliances. But that's going to be a wait and see how our revenue stream goes this year.
Great. And gray water.
And yeah, on that note, I'm going to open it up for public comment. Is that okay? Is there any public comment on this item, Ms. Tacker?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And I found the table 9, where the total water demand for groundwater and surface water, I found that pretty amazing for all four of you and the agriculture. But I think it's important to note, because sometimes I hear, and I hear it really only here, and I think it's misstated that the others are pumping just willy-nilly. I think the other agencies have been very conscientious, and if you go through this table and do a little math just from 2013 to 2014, Grover Beach has reduced its demand by 445 acre feet in 1 year. That's phenomenal. Arroyo Grande, 359 acre feet. Pismo Beach, 200 acre feet. Oceano, 80 acre feet. I encourage you to go to the website and look at Ben Fine's report for this very same thing. Mr. Ogren's report is very heavily worded towards seawater intrusion. And some years ago, and Jeff has said it to you many times, you can't put the seawater intrusion genie back in the bottle. Mr. Ogren's not doing that at all. He's not helping you put it back in the bottle. His whole report is about the risk of seawater intrusion. I live in a community where seawater intrusion is a real thing, and it takes a long time, and you have a lot of indicators before it's here. So we have said to you before, and I see it right now, the Northern Cities Management Area is managing your water away from you. You're not pumping your 900 acre feet. You're not using the Lopez allocation. You're only using state water. Now, that is responsible, but the allocations are going to change. The report is being reported in other places, and I'm afraid you're going to lose those allocations. Additionally, and it's a question, what you're storing behind the dam, what you're not using, and the concern about Grover Beach perhaps needing more water in the future, is that an opportunity to sell that water?
Thank you, Ms. Tucker.
And I guess maybe someday you'll ask that same question.
Let's see. I did notice in the executive summary that it was talking about the groundwater elevations along the coast here. In the spring, they were just about at 5, just a little less than 5 feet above sea level, but in the fall of 2014, they were at 0 to 3 feet above sea level. And that is scarily close to sea level for me. And we are very close to the ocean. So it is still at the front of my brain. And I think it's something that we need to keep in consideration as we plan our strategies with our water. I did have a question. I noticed that it said that there was a pumping depression near ours, well, 7 and 8, at least from last year. I'm sorry, yes. So in the report it says that. But I was also noticing on page 34 it said that there would, but I was curious what you found. I realized I don't know if I ever asked. Your mic's not on. Sorry.
So the challenge with data associated with monitoring wells and pumping and everything, if we're pumping really heavily and we see our depression developing around our wells and then we cut back and we see the groundwater levels coming back up and there's some indication of that, does that mean that we're fine if we just pump when we can and then reduce? Well, the challenge there is that when the groundwater level comes back up, is that because seawater is moving in or not? And so that's part of our strategy here, is that we were pumping heavily earlier. Mm-hmm. Right now, because we've seen groundwater levels go way down, and we're also in the summer months, so now we've cut back on groundwater pumping so that we can go back and look at the data. Because right now, we can't draw any conclusions on anything. You know, we can't draw the conclusion that seawater intrusion is happening. We know that the risk increases. You know, with respect to... if we really wanted to pump heavily, we could go inland and pump more, but I don't think it's wise to spend the money necessary to, you know, for new wells. So we are continuing to do some groundwater pumping, but we're trying to be really judicious about it. With respect to, you know, risks associated with losing supplies, I think that all the data indicates that all the water that all the agencies need, we all need it for our reliability purposes. This drought, more than anything else, points to the fact that we need all of our sources of supply. We need our groundwater, we need our Lopez water, we need our state water. If anything, I think that the comments more is that in the years past, prior to 2013, prior to 2012, that Oceano might have pumped more than it did. If we have drought buffer and we can actually store state water in San Luis Reservoir, then that improves the ability to pump more, you know, in the years that the water is actually there. But those were, you know, measures that were implemented in prior years, and we know better what we need to do now. But this data overall just shows that every agency needs all the allocations of water. And, you know, I'm not going to speculate on the possibility of us losing any of the water allocations. Two of them are contractually driven, and the other one's already been recognized, you know, by the stipulations. So it would take a lot in order to undo any of that.
We've been on the edge of fear when it comes to losing our water rights. So, yeah. You know.
Well, you know, and my comments around seawater intrusion are the fact that we're monitoring data. If we see seawater getting picked up in any of the monitoring wells, then we're going to have a good history of data to see what are the conditions under which it occurs. And I didn't provide any prediction in here that it's going to happen, right? But that data that these efforts are tracking is really good in the event that it does happen. And right. Fact is, we have to be concerned about it. You can't live on the coast of California, be in a basin like we're at, and not be concerned about seawater intrusion.
That's right.
That would just simply be burying our heads in the sand. So, again, far from predicting that it's imminent, but an issue of concern and a risk that we need to be careful about, you know, it's clear. It's common sense.
Okay, so did we need to take action on the
Yeah, so we have two action items that are recommended as part of staff recommendations. And that would be the approval of the FUGRO contract for the 2015 report, as well as the transducer replacements. And if it met your board's pleasure, a motion to
I'll entertain
for staff recommendations would work.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, no, I'll second.
Great.
Ms. Blackburn.
Sorry.
No.
Nope.
No. Any public comment on this?
Nope.
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 Did.
Okay. Done. Already did it.
Well, you call a question.
We'll call.
Okay. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining? It passes 5-0. Okay.
We're going to do one more, don't we, on the transistors?
No, yeah. I think that was...
We need hearing items? No? Don't we have the trash next?
That's October...
October 28th. Yeah. And so that provides the 45-day period. And South County Sanitary has got the notice out to the print shop and should be in the mail tomorrow.
I got mine.
And they will be coming to present to the changes, or...
They will be here on the 28th. When we get the report from Statler, that will be posted to the website. I'll follow up with Vice President's notice, because as we recall, in years past, South County Sanitary had Halcyon identified with the county as opposed to Oceano.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back and double check. Yeah, maybe if we can touch base.
Worked very closely with Oceano over the years, and I know that him and Barbara, you know, man, who recently has gone back east, you know, he took a liking to the area and really worked very closely with us, and then a couple times, you know, worked around some of our needs, and so we'd like to get to know our.
And so I'll ask them if they can come out here and. As it was mentioned during committee reports, by Director Blackburn, I believe, a big driver here is the food composting requirement that came down. It was either South County Sanitary is really responding to, you know, some of the directives that they're getting, but they've done an interesting job in terms of going out for proposals to find different options on how to do the food composting and their overall composting efforts. I've reviewed some of that on a real preliminary basis, but I could ask them to come out and do a presentation on what they've been working on. It's just an update in the middle of the Prop 218 process.
You know, I just think a well-informed community, you know, understands not so much pushback when they understand what they're being asked of, and quite frankly, nobody knows about that unless you're watching legislative issues. So most households have no idea that this is coming down.
And during my discussions with them over the last few weeks, they definitely extended the offer multiple times to come out here, so I'll talk to them and figure out when it works out well.
Yeah.
Maybe yeah, I just...
So we can feel the love.
That's important.
Maybe I...
Rio Grande, Grover, and Pismo's meeting, so I would have expected that they've had some posting going on already. But I think it's important to clarify, since we had a boundary issue previously...
I'll triple check.
That they've got that covered, yeah.
Just like my yellow postcard from the sanitation from Sand District. I had to explain to my whole community why we were getting yellow postcards about not being billed.
Yeah. Oh, the one with no header?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't tell you what you were getting it for? That one?
It's just that we don't have any service from the sanitation district.
Yeah. Okay. So, any future agenda items?
Well.
The deep hole in the ground.
Yes. You know, right now I think that my focus really has to be on some of our internal business practices.
Mm-hmm.
We're down a couple of staff. We've I need to do work to get the auditors ready. I'd hope to be earlier on schedule. But staffing turnover has readjusted our priorities.
Okay.
So my thought is to keep the agendas relatively light, but some of the upcoming items in addition to the sanitary is that, we're obviously in closed session talking about labor negotiations. I would anticipate that will be on a future agenda item in the not-too-distant future.
Okay.
But, you know, there's still more work to
committee point of view?
Oh, so the strategic planning committee is Director Blackburn and Director Guerrero. And so I would expect in the next 4 to 6 weeks, meeting with the strategic planning committee, going through goals, and then coming back to your board October, November, to do a review of how we're doing in 2015 and to have discussions about where we want to go in 2016.
Okay, great. So then we will keep it light. We'll just pick up more participation in our committees, our subcommittees, and, yeah, and we'll just lean on the directors a little bit more to report back. So it'll free up a little bit of your time to administratively get some.
Yeah, and our challenge of even cancel a meeting really gets down to AP and making sure we're timely on our paying of our bills. So if the opportunity arises, I might even see about possibility of canceling a meeting if, you know, again, if the opportunity arises. But I got to play that a little bit more in my ear.
And if anybody's going to be out of town and for the rest of the year, you know, at any point that's scheduled, should probably let Mr. Ogren know, and that might help a little bit too. I know that I'll be gone in December, so hearing none, I'll take public comment on closed session items, and then we'll move into closed session. Any public comment for items that are in closed session? None?
Okay. The board will adjourn.
One second.
Yeah.
Let's do real quick received written communication. Do we have any of that? Okay. And no late receives? Nope. Okay.
10.6, conference with labor negotiators. The agency designated representative is Mr. Ogren. The employee organization is the Service Employees International Union 620.
Thank you. Mr. Minery, we're back in session. May I please ask you to report out of closed session?
Yes, President Lucy. Coming out of closed session, we have no reportable action.
Great.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. How'd I do?